just after 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Smith and Jones for a Wednesday afternoon hump day. Gorgeous day outside and a very busy day in the world of sports, certainly as it relates to your Toronto teams, as we'll have action later on this evening between the Toronto Blue Jays and the New York Yankees. Also in action this evening, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Edmonton Oilers, 8 o'clock puck drop. That's 8 o'clock Eastern. And, of course, the Toronto Raptors returning to action, 7 o'clock tip-off between the Raptors and Pistons, as Toronto has been delayed by a couple of days. Supposed to play on Sunday against Chicago. That game ultimately didn't happen, as you all know. And then the tip-off yesterday that was scheduled for Detroit pushed to today. And Jonesy, the Raptors entering action now tonight without the services of Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, OG Anunoby, Patrick McCaw, and Malachi Flynn, let alone Nick Nurse and five of his staff as well. So it is an extremely depleted Raptors team tonight getting set for the lowly Pistons.
Yeah, and, you know, people were throwing it out there on Twitter, and we've talked about it. You're never supposed to win in the NBA. We talk about it all the time because the other team, they get paid too, and they are professional athletes as well. But you look at the Raptors coming off a win and then facing a Chicago team, which people probably looked at as a very winnable game, and this one. And we know how tight the standings are in the East. You know, you go to a, you know, go to a have a 3-0 week, and all of a sudden you jump in the standings. Although the Raptors aren't really hurting right now when it comes to the standings, they're doing well, but you just don't want these, you just don't want these games to, you know, the postponed games to build up and then have to try to jam them in on the back half. And they might be in a spot where you get a back-to-back-to-back, or you get a 4-5 nights because you've added a back-to-back in there. And the fewer games you can have postponed for what's coming up in the second half of the season, the better. No question.
I want to ask you a question here. And Jonesy, I feel like I've maybe, if I haven't broken my rule this year, I've certainly walked the fine line, and I'm acknowledging it right away. This is me, you know, coming clean and admitting. We've walked the fine line with the fantasy stuff and the trade rumors and everything else. But I literally just popped up ESPN.com simply to bring up the NBA standings while you were talking.
So did I.
To my next point.
So I saw the headline.
Okay, so I'm going to bring it back to the Raptors, and I'm going to bring it back to tonight's game and COVID and everything else. And we will discuss that also, by the way, folks, later in the show when Michael Graines joins us. And in a few minutes' time, former Major League pitcher Dan Plesac from the MLB Network is going to talk about the Toronto Blue Jays and a lot of other stories around Major League Baseball. So lots of baseball and basketball coming up on the show today. And again, of course, the Leafs in action tonight against the Oilers as Toronto continues to roll roughshod through the North Division. But I fire up ESPN, and you said you just saw it as well. For everybody that bemoans the fact that the Raptors never get any play stateside and they never get front page and they never get, you know, the spotlight shone on them, even in the championship season, you go to ESPN.com right now, not even on the NBA section, ESPN.com, the main page, there's a picture of Kyle Lowry right smack dab front and center on ESPN.com. Of course, that's the second site you go to after Sportsnet.ca. And it's talking about trades, potential trades. Now, listen, let's be perfectly clear, folks. Abundantly clear. This is not a trade rumor. This is a fantasy trade. This is a column written by various NBA experts and insiders at ESPN who collaborated, put their brains together to try and come up with, you know, certain trades and five deals that they see that could make sense across the association. And the number one deal that they speak about, and if I'm reading it correct, it's by our friend Tim Bontemps. And Timmy's certainly plugged in and certainly knows the league and knows the inner workings of the CBA and all that type of stuff. This would be Tim or ESPN's idea. It's a three-team deal in which Toronto would give up Kyle Lowry, and if I'm reading correctly, nothing else. They give up Kyle Lowry in a three-team deal with Cleveland and Philadelphia, which would net the Raptors Andre Drummond, Tyrese Maxey, a 2021 first-round pick unprotected from Philly, and a 2023 first-round pick from Philly as well. Now, Jonesy, I want Kyle Lowry finishing the season as a Toronto Raptor. I want Kyle Lowry re-signing a contract with the Raptors. I want Kyle Lowry retiring as a member of the Raptors. But if that were a deal that were out there, that would be one I'd have to certainly look long and hard at, because Drummond's expiring. I don't need to re-sign him. I'm only keeping him for a couple of months if I ultimately don't decide that I want to keep him around. I'm getting a young, potentially very, very good piece in Maxey and 2 first-round picks. That'd be a heck of a haul for a guy that would be a free agent in the summertime.
Yeah, and I guess the question is, and here we go down the road. I'm putting my hiking.
I acknowledged. You don't have to follow me down the path if you don't want to.
No. We're in this. I'm putting on my hiking boots and I'm walking about 10 steps behind you, with a large stave in my hand in case I see any kind of animal or bear. I'm going to swing, drop the stick, and turn around and run the other way. Just so you know. I'm with you, win or tie.
All right.
It depends on, philosophically, what you feel your chances are. Because I see the East as wide open with maybe 2 teams at the top. Brooklyn and Philly. And if you think you can beat them with Kyle Lowry, then you keep them. If you don't, because you're going to end up giving them to Phily, which may put them over
the... But you're trading them, yeah.
You're trading them to Philly, but you're trading them to Philly knowing that you're also probably trading away your chance to beat them, correct?
Listen, facing Philadelphia with Kyle Lowry, Joel Embiid, and Ben Simmons, yeah, that'd be pretty difficult. That said, you know, again, we're playing this hypothetical. I'd still have Van Vliet, Siakam, Powell, and Anobi, and now I'd have Drummond, Boucher, might still have Baines. I got Maxey coming off the bench with Davis and Thomas and... Yes. The experience factor, the championship factor, the pedigree, the everything, the intangibles. Yes, I would say Philadelphia would be favored. Absolutely.
I'll use your line, your preface that you started with. You want Kyle Lowry as a Raptor. You want him to re-sign. You want him to retire. I'll truncate your line and give you the snipped version. If there's a basketball game going on, I want Kyle Lowry on my team, not the other team.
Absolutely. Totally agree.
So, again, it goes back
very reason alone. That's why tonight, I know you don't, as you said off the top of the show, you don't play the record, you play the team, and you got to deal with who you got and da-da-da-da. That's why I'm not counting the Raptors out tonight. They might be playing the lowly Pistons. They might be without 5 guys. They might be without 3 starters. As long as I got Kyle Lowry on my team, I'm not betting against Toronto. Not in this game. Anyways, go ahead.
Yeah. No, and to what we were saying, if you don't think you can win the East, or you're ready to, or, and I stress or, you're ready to shuffle the deck to maybe move laterally or a slight step back to eventually get stronger because of what you talked about, a kid like Tyrese Maxey, you know, a first round pick, you know, lottery protected pick, or if not 2 second round picks, if you're willing to do that, and you might not be able to beat them, even though you've added Drummond and, you know, all these other pieces, then go ahead and do it. But the key is, as I always say, you buy the house, you pay the mortgage. If this allows you to pay off the mortgage a little faster and know you're not going to win, but then have some money to spend and make some moves and quickly vault back into the championship fray after backing up a little bit, then go for it. And I think it's all in what management's philosophy is and where they see themselves this current season going forward.
Mm, No, I hear you. I hear you loud and clear. It's certainly interesting fodder, I'm sure, for social media and for, you know, sports talk shows and everything else, you know, as it's thrown out there, the possibility of the trade again with the NBA trade deadline coming up towards the end of this month. And the Raptors again getting set for action tonight against the Detroit Pistons and on the back-to-back tomorrow against the Boston Celtics before enjoying a week off. It's technically 5 days for the All-Star break, but the Raptors' final game is tomorrow, and they don't play again until next Thursday. And it will be rest for a bunch of guys because, unfortunately, Fred VanVleet didn't make the All-Star game. Ditto, obviously, for Pascal Siakam and Kyle Lowry as well. And none of the players invited to take part in the three-point shootout or the skills competition or whatnot. So there will be no Toronto representation during All-Star weekend in Atlanta either. So it should be a time and maybe a perfect time, considering everything that's happening with the Raptors, for them to rest, recuperate, deal with the COVID, and simply move on from there. We're going to shift our attention in a couple of moments here to baseball. Again, Dan Plesac, former MLB pitcher, is set to join us from the MLB Network. Until we track him down, Jonesy, let's stay maybe on this path.
Sure.
And I want to ask you then about All-Star. Forgetting the Raptor stuff, two things. One, I don't have a problem that Damian Lillard is saying, I don't want to take part in the three-point shootout. I think these guys don't even want to be at the game, most of them. So it's like, what is the least amount of commitment I can make to the weekend? Okay, sign me up then. Because I don't want to be there to begin with. And I hate to speak for the guys or put words in their mouth, but that's the general feeling I get from most of the guys, is that they would rather not be taking part. But then from the league's perspective, I understand it's all about the money. Nobody needs to hit me on Twitter or anybody else, Jonesy, and say, it's money, it's money. I know it's money. But this dunk contest that they're doing at the halftime in the middle of the game with three dudes that most fans haven't even heard of, why bother? Why bother?
Well, I won't hit you up on Twitter, but I'll say it adds to the money. there's part of me that says I don't like this weekend or this game even one day taking place. And I know it's about money. But then there's another part of me that says, all right, for the most part, the NBA has done a pretty good job of getting through things. They've only had a small percentage of games postponed. They're relatively adherent and strict with the protocols. I mean, postponing games, even if it means removing a guy in the middle of the game, like we saw with Kevin Durant, they're sending notices to teams about pulling their masks down and where guys are sitting, and, you know, don't fraternize after the game and hug. Like they're appealing to the side of me that says, I know you don't think we should do this, but here are all the precautions that we are taking. So while I don't necessarily agree with it, I can see everything they're doing to try and make it as safe as possible. So go ahead, get your sponsorship money, try to keep the league going, but boy, be really, really careful about exposing these guys, especially in Atlanta and, you know, a state like Georgia.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I hear that. And then, of course, you've got, you know, Texas coming out yesterday and the, you know, folks saying, oh, it's okay now. Mask mandate is no longer in place. Whip them off. No problem. Go ahead. Just live your life. Anyways, I don't want to get too political here, Jonesy. I want to steer the ship back away from basketball, though, to baseball. And we'll focus on sports. We'll just stay in our own little, pardon the pun here, our own little bubble and avoid politics and the pandemic and world events and just keep our blinders on and say, let's just try and focus on sports for a little bit here. We've been trying to plow through on the NBA side of things as again, we get set for the Raptors and Pistons tonight with the game moved from last night to tonight. And Major League Baseball, for the most part, did a pretty solid job last year in spite of some early hiccups. They got through the season. They crowned a champion, and now they're getting set to look forward to first pitch on a full season, 162 games. And it's certainly going to be a challenge for at least one club in the Toronto Blue Jays, not starting the season at home, but hoping, fingers crossed, that they can come north of the border and play in Toronto at some point this season. But to talk about the Jays and a lot of other stories around Major League Baseball as well, from the MLB Network, former pitcher Dan Plesac. Dan, thanks for the time today.
Hey, there's a lot of great things going on with the Blue Jays right now. Listen, I get you. They're going to start the season in Dunedin, but don't worry, Blue Jays fans. They will be back north of the border, an exciting young team. I thought bringing in George Springer was a huge move. A year ahead of schedule, maybe last year, but I'm telling you what, this is a really good team. And I think pound for pound, they're just as good as the New York Yankees, and expect the Blue Jays to be in the mix, not to be in the postseason, but they have a legit shot to win the AL East.
Wow. Well, see, Dan, you just took like you just took my like first four questions away, so I don't even need to talk to you now, man. You just hit me with the goods right off the bat.
I'm
going to give you a guy that I'm just going to tell you. I've been high on this guy for 3 or 4 years, and it's hard to be excited about a guy that's pitched lousy. Remember the name Steven Matz. His first appearance yesterday in Dunedin, he threw the ball really well yesterday. A couple of innings, a few strikeouts. He needed out of New York in the worst way, and he wouldn't be the first pitcher that had changed his scenery that did hit some good. His fastball was still electric, great curveball, his slider, his changeup. At times, he was really good last year. You put him in that rotation behind Ryu, and if Nate Pearson can stay healthy, Robbie Ray throws strikes, Tanner Roark, Steven Matz, I think, quietly is going to be able to fit into that rotation. Less expectations, grew up in Long Island, pitching for the Mets. He needed to get out, and I think Blue Jays are going to be the beneficiaries of this. He's going to have a big year for the Blue Jays, and I'll put my word on it.
Hey, Dan, why did you say, and give me your reasoning behind saying that the Jays, every bit as good as the Yankees, you know, when you throw that out there, and in the mix for the AL East, but maybe not necessarily the whole shooting match. If they're as good as the Yankees and they could win the East, why doesn't that put them in? Is it an experience thing? Why doesn't that put them in the mix for the whole thing?
Well, the whole thing, if you're looking at it realistically, the Dodgers are the best team in baseball, and they just got better when they acquired Trevor Bauer. So I think front and center, if you were going to ask me who's the best team in baseball, the Dodgers are up on another level, and the San Diego Padres spent a lot of money. They acquired Blake Snell. They made some additions, too, in getting Yu Darvish. But with that said, what I like about this Blue Jays team is they were young and they were hungry, and they had every chance to wilter in the month of September last year. They found a way and couldn't have had it any worse. Playing their home games in Buffalo, they didn't have a home last year, but it was another year of developing young players. They bring in Marcus Semien, who's a shortstop. He hasn't complained. He's going to move over to second base. In my opinion, so many good young players on that Blue Jays organization. Bo Bichette is their best young player. That's just my opinion. Vlad Guerrero has dropped 40 pounds. I think it's going to do him a world of good. But you look around at that infield right now with Kevin Biescheid with third base, Bo Bichette, Marcus Semien, and at first base, Vlad Guerrero Jr., they can match up pound for pound with just about anybody in baseball. And then you question the Yankees. How can you say that? With the exception after Gerrit Cole, there are a lot of questions with that Yankee starting pitching. What's Corey Kluber going to be? He hasn't pitched really. He's been hurt for the last couple of years. Jameson Taillon, who they acquired from the Pittsburgh Pirates, he's had a difficult time staying healthy. You know, there's a lot of questions with that Yankees rotation. I'm going to tell you this, and this is the way I feel. The Yankees have a chance to be a really good team, but if Gerrit Cole at all gets injured or misses some time, he's the most important player on any team in baseball because there is a dramatic drop-off from Gerrit Cole to 2, 3, 4, and 5 in that starting rotation, and there's not that big of a drop-off when you're talking about the Jays pitching.
Speaking with Dan Plesac from the MLB Network, a former pitcher, former Blue Jay as well. Dan, let's stay on that topic for a second. And in the interest of, you know, not getting the blue and white pom-poms waving too much here, is starting pitching a concern for the Toronto Blue Jays as well in terms of depth? Yeah.
It is. You could say the same. You could throw a lot of question marks. Nate Pearson, do you like the prospects? Do you like what he is? Of course, it's hard not to like an arm, a guy that throws 100 miles an hour and has a great breaking ball. But he's yet to prove it at the big league level. Robbie Ray, if he can throw strikes, he strikes out, but his pitch count gets high. The problem with Robbie Ray is he gets to the fourth and fifth inning, his pitch count's up there near 75, 80 pitches, and you have to take him out of games. But I think there's tremendous upside. Tanner Roark is what he is. He manages a game. To me, the big key for the Blue Jays rotation, if they can hit on one of two guys, if Robbie Ray and or Steven Matz can find that magic and be good pitchers again, their stock's going to go way up. Now, is that a big if? I think it's an if. It's not a gigantic if, but I will say it, and I said it when I came on the air. I really think Steven Matz has a chance to be the comeback player of the year. When you think about last year, he had an ERA over 9. That's hard to do if you tried. He allowed more earned runs than innings pitched last year. You will not see that from Steven Matz this year. He, in my opinion, he has a chance to be the American League comeback player of the year, and I think he's going to have a big year for the Blue Jays.
Hey, Dan, as a pitcher, tell me, and you mentioned Nate Pearson in there. When does the light go on and you become, you go from thrower to pitcher? What helps
about
that?
Two full seasons. That's why I'm a little bit concerned. He's had limited experience, and he's basically a guy that he's used to being overpowering, seeing swings and misses. He's equating good outings with strikeouts. He's equating good outings with a lot of swings and misses. I'm a firm believer, and you go back and you talk to all the really good pitchers in Blue Jays histories. You talk to Pat Hankin and Roger Clemens and Jimmy Key and Dave Steeb. It takes you almost two seasons to, one, understand your body, to understand your stuff, how to use it, when to use it, and how to be not so hard on yourself. What I mean by that is learn how to – every inning doesn't have to be a 15, 18-pitch inning to think you have to strike two or three guys out a game. Take those innings, and if you can get away with an inning early on, an 8, 9-pitch inning, go ahead and do that. That's what all the great ones have done over the course of time. Roger Clemens, Randy Johnson, Brett Saberhagen, Jimmy Key. These were all guys that could strike people out, but they figured out towards the middle, the end part of their career, like, hey, it's not that bad to have an easy inning, get a couple of ground balls and a pop-up. So Nate Pearson gets stuck with a lot of young pitchers, particularly now they're all chasing velocity, and they're pitching to that radar gun. And the radar gun and the gun ratings don't equate to having a good outing. And I think it's going to be so important in 2021 because of the shortened season last year. There were virtually no minor leagues. Every team was having guys pitching at the alternate site. Innings are going to be at a premium for all 30 teams. Can the Blue Jays get enough innings out of Ryu, Pearson, Ray, Roark, and Matz? If they can, they'll be playing in October.
Dan, on that point then, just staying with it for a second, do you think that if you're management going into the season right now, do you address it now or do you wait and see how it plays out the first month of the season if it needs to be addressed then?
There's no question. I'm thinking Ross Atkins right now. They're on the phones. They're on the line. They're trying for depth. There are 30 general managers right now in Major League Baseball that are scared to death about what this 162-game season presents. Not because they're afraid of their team. They're afraid of, do we have enough arms to get through 162 games? Virtually, the minor leagues were shut down last year. So you have a lot of inexperienced guys that were at Double-A and Triple-A that haven't had a chance to throw competitively. I get it. They were at alternate sites, but that's certainly not conducive or similar to pitching in games. All 30 general managers right now are scared to death of if one or two guys go down, and it happens virtually with every team, you're going to have a setback or two. Do we have enough depth in the organization to contain it till our guys get healthy again? Every team crossing their fingers, the Blue Jays are no different. Every team, maybe with the exception of the Dodgers, who have more pitchers for more spots, when David Price is your number four starter, you're pretty solid. There are 29 teams other than the Dodgers right now that are really concerned about, can they get enough innings out of their rotation to make it through the season?
Dan, who's a surprise this year that we look for in the AL? Who's a surprise team? Who's going to surprise us?
I think a surprise team that might win more games, the Kansas City Royals. I think they have some terrific young players that are on their way. They have some good young pitchers. I know the White Sox are kind of the sexy team because of the additions they made. They're terrific young players. The Twins are good. But I think the Kansas City Royals might be the one team that not a lot of baseball people are talking about. I'm not saying they're going to win the Central. I don't think they will. I think the Twins are still the team to beat. But don't count the Royals out, being kind of what the Blue Jays were last year, a team that made some jumps, and they might be able to qualify and make a run at a wild card spot.
Speaking with Dan Plesac from the MLB Network, former pitcher, former Blue Jay. Dan, I actually want to jump back to the Jays. I apologize there, but I had one more about the Jays. You mentioned earlier in our conversation Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Losing the 40 pounds. How good do you think this is for him, the sense that the spotlight isn't entirely on him now? Go back a couple of seasons, it was all Vladdy, 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 and he's going to come save the organization and turn around. Suddenly then, as you said, Bichette comes into the mix. He's their best young player. Now you add a George Springer. Now you've got other pieces coming in where there's enough to watch with the Jays and enough storylines to follow that it's not just every day let's see what's Vladdy doing and allowing him maybe to now kind of find himself in this literally new body.
And I think it was a must for Vladimir Guerrero. The last thing that you want to be is pegged early on as a player. He played himself out of shape last year playing third base. He came up as a third baseman. There were some people thought, hey, that might be a stretch. Was he eventually going to move over to first base? But nobody thought in his early 20s that he was going to have to go to first base because he didn't have a handle on his body. And I think losing the 40 pounds was a must for Vladimir Guerrero. The last thing you want to listen, I understand if you can hit, they're going to find a place for you to play. But a full-time DH in your early 20s, that's not a recipe for a long and prosperous career. So I think not only for Vlad, but for the Toronto Blue Jays, it's for him to get in shape, and he is now, stay in shape, and see how good this guy can be. Because there was no way carrying the additional 40 pounds that he was carrying last year that you or any of the other Blue Jays fans were going to get a chance to see what this guy could really do. He's in shape. He doesn't want to be the missing link. This team is going places, and you touched on it. This team isn't all centered around Vlad Jr. anymore. You have Bo Bichette. You have Kevin Biggio. They bring in Marcus Semien. They go out and they sign George Springer. If he wants to jump on this bus, he better be ready and stay in shape. I think it was a wake-up call. And I think if he wants to stay in that lineup, he's too young to be a DH. He needs to keep himself in shape and be the best first baseman that he can be, and that he and the Blue Jays will both benefit from that.
Now, Dan, before I let you go here, if Toronto actually is able, you know, if we can get the Jays back up north of the border and into Toronto, if they have, you know, any concern about maybe getting the field set and ready, can we count on you to come up as well and rejoin the grounds crew and help get the field all ready to rock?
Let me tell you something. There is nothing I'd rather do than be an honorary ground crew member for the ground crew. I'll even do it in a postseason game. I'll do all I can do with MLB Network to negotiate where I can get a long couple of days off, and I will drive. If I have to drive, I will be up at Rogers Center, and I will be shoveling or sweeping. Whatever they need me to do, I'll be back part of the ground crew.
All right, Dan, we appreciate the time today. Thanks for all the info and the insight, and I'm sure you're going to be hearing from Blue Jay fans after some of the hot takes and the optimism you provided today. We appreciate this.
You got it. Two words. Go Jays.
All right,
thanks, Dan.
Thanks very much. There's Dan Plesac from the MLB Network, former Major League pitcher, 18 years in the league, including time with the Toronto Blue Jays. And for folks that don't know why I brought up the grounds crew, just, you know, fire up Google and type in, like, Dan Plesac, grounds crew, Toronto. And I don't know if you remember that moment, Jonesy, where he was out in the bullpen and he dressed up, you know, as a member of the grounds crew literally mid-game and just ran out with the crew and was out there sweeping at second base and chalking the lines in the middle of the game and then ran back to the bullpen with the rest of the guys. So it was certainly a funny, organic moment that just kind of happened to occur.
Wasn't the Blue Jays grounds crew referred to as the fastest grounds crew in all of baseball or something like that? I remember being in university and one of a guy who was in my class and coming in the next day falling asleep in the lab. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? And he was part of the grounds crew, and he would talk about the guys and how it was like the 100-meter dash to get out there to get to your thing. And they used to fight to see, no, why don't I get third today? It's further to go to first and just all of that stuff. So yeah, it's awesome. I remember Plesac doing that. And he's got quite a sense of humor, and you got to love that of being around pro sports.
Yeah, definitely appreciate his time today. Again, longtime Major League pitcher Dan Plesac. When we come back, we'll shift our attention from baseball back to basketball and the Toronto Raptors getting set. Severely undermanned to play the Pistons tonight. We will discuss that and more with Michael Grange on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. All right, Brandeo, I'm banning this one. I can't do it because I love the track, but it's such a long build-in, and then I can't hit the post, and then I get stuck. You know, like I have to ask you to stop playing. Well, either that, if you don't want me to ban LaGrange, knowing that Grange is coming on, then we all have to collectively commit to the fact that I'm waiting until the song actually kicks in, because it's like a 45-second buildup, and I feel like I'm wasting airtime, which I'm probably doing right now. So I just got to commit then to waiting till it really kicks in. Ah, and you still haven't played my Billy Ocean for me yet. All right, back on Smith & Jones. It is Eric Smith and Paul Jones, and the aforementioned Michael Grange from Sportsnet joining us on the line. Michael, thanks for the time today.
No worries, gentlemen. How is everybody?
Now, has anybody ever explained to you, Michael, I assume you know this is like your intro music then? Like, did you request this?
Yeah, I didn't request it. And I actually have if you know me, you won't be surprised at all. I have a long list of songs I really, really like, but don't necessarily know the title of. And right. Once you mentioned, because I was kind of going, wait a second, we did this exact same thing when it was on last week. Like the song plays, you kind of do this thing where you're kind of upset about the, you know, because it's a bad intro or difficult intro. And then you said the title, and I go, okay, that's why. So there we go.
Yes. Well, and I'm actually not making it up. It
I'm
actually does annoy
I got
me. I got love Derek, and he's the best. But I mean, like, I just don't know, like, when I'm supposed to jump in, so it becomes fresh. So, Michael, we're going to, like, I know Jonesy gets, you know, Counting Crows, Mr. Jones. There's probably 19,000 Smith songs out there, but I know a lot of times they play Fat Bottom Girls when I come on the air because I happen to mention a story, like, a decade ago that when my kid was still in the womb, he used to kick my wife's stomach whenever I played Fat Bottom Girls. It's the only song he would bounce around to inside the womb. So now they play that song whenever I come on the air. So if there's a song you would like other than LaGrange, we'll make it happen for you next time you're on.
All right, I'll think about it.
Yeah, Michael.
We're good for now.
It's okay. I'm making a request too. Like I hear Counting Crows every time I'm on another show, and like my real song would be, Public Enemy, Fight the Power. Like that's kind of more symbolic to me. But you know, the guys behind, you just kind of roll with it. I hear you, Grange. I hear exactly where you're coming from. You wait for the shot to come to you.
Absolutely. Yeah. You gotta be flexible.
That's right.
Here, I'm gonna show the trained broadcaster that I am looking for a segue here. As the Raptors will be looking for plenty of shots tonight from who, Michael? Because with five guys out, obviously extremely, extremely depleted. What do you think Sergio does tonight in terms of his starters, his rotation, and how the Raptors try to attack this one with so many guys sidelined?
Yeah, it's kind of fun, actually. I mean, you got Norm and Kyle, I presume Boucher. I think you probably got to bring in – I guess it depends what he wants to do with his – you know, does he want to actually have a second unit, or is it just going to be kind of like a fire drill and whoever's up is up? Because you do have, you know, three starters in theory with – because you could go with Aaron Baines and then Norm and Kyle, and then you would still have – Boucher to anchor some version of a second unit. We've seen Bembry start, so that's four. And probably you don't want Navi, I would say, would be take OG's place. There you go.
Interesting.
Yeah, and Michael, I'm with you. I think it's going to be very fluid. And sometimes less is more, you know, like when you – I mean, I'm not downplaying the fact that they don't have – you know, well, three starters for one, but some of those guys, you can get away with it for a while. You get exposed if you go a long time, but you might be able to win a game or two here or there with guys coming in and you know, surprising the opposition, kind of that next man up attitude. And you know, Sergio's in a tough spot, but at the same time, he's watched Nick operate like this the whole time. So he's got to have some idea of how he's going to manage it.
Oh, for sure he does. And I guess, obviously, you'll have to dictate, it'll be dictated a little bit by how the game goes. But, you know, presumably they're in it early and they've got to, you know, I think you got to go all in to win against the Pistons. Like, if you get one of these next two games, you're going pretty well. Obviously, the Pistons as the first night of a back-to-back and the Pistons versus the Celtics, you'd like to think your chances are pretty good. So where the team is really going to struggle is minutes without Kyle Lowry, which is, you know, that's nothing new. They've always kind of struggled, but you don't have Van Vliet to pick it up, you know, with the second unit or vice versa. So I think if you're going to run Kyle out there for extended minutes, and they've been off now, so he's really fresh, you know, I would think tonight would be the night to do it. And I agree. I'm kind of looking forward to it. I think you'll probably be some really got a chance to see some really good performances. You know, we've seen Norm Powell in moments like this where he's got, you know, he's got a long leash. I find he does feast. You know, it's nothing disparaging to say. I think he does feast on weaker teams. We've seen that over his career. If you give him a minute, he'll take it. And you know, the Pistons would fit that profile, so I could see Norm having a huge game. And then it's going to be, you know, if they're going to do well, it's going to have to be someone who is going to benefit from that extra runway. And maybe it is Yuta Watanabe, who, you know, we've seen glimpses of some of the things he's able to do offensively. But if he's really knows he's going to be out there for 30, 32 minutes, you know, maybe he kind of relaxes and flashes a little bit of offense, or at least some opportunistic offense, that to a level we haven't quite seen before. I mean, Boucher is a guy who, you know, we know can really change games. And if he comes and plays with a ton of energy, you know, he can be really impactful again. Like, he'll eat up all the minutes he can get, right? So he's got to stay out of foul trouble. So, you know, it's one of those games where there's no pressure. The expectations would be pretty low. And I think opportunities are high. And that should bring out the best in at least a couple of guys.
Speaking with Sportsnet's Michael Grange. Michael, you know, what I find interesting, just as an aside, and I think I speak for Jonesy's behalf as well, I'd be interested to see if Paul Watson gets any significant action tonight as well, because he's a guy that we both kind of believe, you know, could be due for a jump at some point. He might be sort of the next untapped resource for the Raptors. So we'll see if that happens tonight. But to that point, and maybe I'm guilty of trying to find a positive angle to how bad this actually is and the hand that's been dealt the Raptors with players and coaches missing. But do you think this almost in a warped way comes at a decent time? Now, I'm not just talking about the break for the All-Star break. I'm talking about Bobby Webster and Masai Ujiri getting at least a couple of games tonight and tomorrow to maybe see some of these guys that are a little bit deeper in the rotation, or some of the guys in the second unit playing a more significant role. And does that help the evaluation when you're looking at a trade deadline a few weeks from now, saying, all right, well, can we rely on these guys? If this guy had to play 12 minutes instead of 8 minutes, if this guy had to play 20 instead of 12, could this guy have a greater role on this team? And you're getting a little mini tryout for a couple of days to see what this team could look like if certain moves were made.
I think that's fair. I mean, I don't know if doing it against the Pistons is exactly the, you know, going to give you the feedback you'd mm-hmm. want, right? So, you know, I think a true test might come against Boston. No disrespect to the Pistons, but, you know, the scenario you're describing is, do you have guys who can compete against upper half teams in the league? And the Pistons aren't that this year. And I think any kind of discussion around this, you know, we just have to, and I know you would anyways, but let's just assume that no one gets really sick out of this. And you know, everyone's pretty asymptomatic and they're all young and healthy, and it kind of comes and goes with no lingering effects. If that's the case, then this is probably the best case scenario you could have, right? Because, you know, it's your, let's just say the All-Star break wasn't coming. You'd be, and some of the guys who are out are, and we don't know who's tested positive, who hasn't, but let's assume some of them have tested positive. And even if they're asymptomatic, the shortest number of days you can be out is 12. And in a normal course of 12 days in this compressed season, you're talking 6, maybe 7 games. Whereas the max, I think anyone's probably going to miss is 2. Not the max, but you'd hope the minimum anyone's going to miss is 2, but it could only be 2. And I think, you know, when you look how tightly packed the Eastern Conference is, that's huge, right? You wouldn't want to be a team who's limping through, you know, an every other night, maybe, you know, 5 games in 7 night stretch, shorthanded, missing, you know, 3 of your absolute core players. And, you know, and then the extra wear and tear that puts on the guys who are playing, you know, that can really send a season into a tailspin. And we've seen that with teams, you know, the Wizards comes to mind and stuff like that. So getting it out of the way now, You know, I think it's a good thing. I getting it out of the way before the trade deadline is probably a good thing. So, again, as long as no one's actually going to get really sick out of this, and you can only cross your fingers, you know, it's probably worked out as well as it could.
Michael, what do you think the Raptors' chances are as we project down the road in the East? I mean, for me, I mean, Philadelphia and Brooklyn, probably the top two teams, although the Raptors have beaten them both. A seven-game series is different than, you know, a one-off in the middle of January or December. But other than those two teams, nobody really scares you in the East. And then, because Eric and I had gone down the road of, you know, what do you do with Kyle Lowry? And I guess the first question is, do you think you can win the East with Kyle Lowry? Or if not, do you make a move and try to kind of reload and then, you know, catapult yourself forward in years to come? But the first question has to be asked is, where do you think they fall in the East? Can they win the East?
I would say the only team that really would make me go, you know, I just can't see them beating Brooklyn, just because I don't really see almost anyone beating Brooklyn when they are all systems go. So assuming that Brooklyn is healthy, those three guys are all on the same page and firing. I just think that's going to be tough. I just, you know, we got a glimpse of that in that one quarter, you remember, before Kevin Durant had to get pulled from that one game. And they were awesome. And we've seen glimpses of that, and only glimpses, because they've had so many injuries and stuff. So I kind of put Brooklyn in a separate category. But then you look at the Raptors head-to-head against all the other so-called top teams, and do any of them really scare you? No. The same token is, I just find it hard to believe that you can strip the number of players that you have from this Raptors team over the past couple of years and win a seven-game series against the Bucks and win a seven-game series against the Sixers. And we saw what happened last year against Boston, mind you. That was, you know, I don't think Raptors played to the fullness of their capability. So I don't see them winning the East. I don't think that's all that controversial. But I don't know if we've seen this Raptors team play at its peak potential when they really get their, you know, if they commit to a small lineup and they really are healthy and everyone's available and all that, you know, they might be a little better than we think. I would say a kind of one factor is, if there was ever a year you're going to risk or gamble on the side of, you know, selling too soon, it would be this year, because, you know, it's very unlikely that this team is going to play any games in Toronto this season. And so if you end up making some kind of what a lot of people would think is a miracle run to the conference finals or beyond, you know, you're not really getting the full benefit of it, right? Like, you're not having, you know, 20,000 people in the building paying premium prices and going nuts and all of that. So I think if you were going to sort of be really calculating about it, you know, maybe you do, this is the season you sort of, you kind of, I don't say punt on this season, but you sort of do play a longer game. And if that ends up, you know, taking you out of the running to win, I don't think it takes you out of the playoffs necessarily, but does it take you out of the running, you know, your best chance of winning a conference championship? Well, I think you probably punted on that in the offseason when you didn't sign Serge Ibaka, to be honest.
Michael, we appreciate the time, as always. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy the game tonight, and we'll be seeing you, at some point in the next week or so, after the All-Star break. All the best.
Have a great time off, guys. Take care.
Okay, Michael.
All the best. There is Michael Grange from Sportsnet, and we'll have the action tonight for you right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So a double dip of Smith and Jones, as we've got you for the final few minutes here of Smith and Jones, and then back again for a 7 o'clock tip-off between the Raptors and Pistons. Wanted to pass along just quickly before we take the break as well. You'll hear more about this, I'm sure, on the sports update at the top of the hour with Andrew Nye, but Austin Matthews and Frederick Anderson expected to return tonight against the Oilers. Sheldon Keefe announcing that earlier during his media availability. That was about 20 minutes or so ago. So again, Matthews and Anderson back in the lineup tonight for the Leafs as they get set for their 8 o'clock puck drop against the Oilers. More Smith and Jones in a moment right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. There it is, Jonesy.
Oh, this was hot back in the day. This was hot.
Yes.
This Billy Ocean was hot. Yeah.
Our friend George Stromboulopoulos sent out a tweet the other day, and he said, "What's a track?" And I'm paraphrasing here, but basically, what's a song that you wouldn't normally have in your rotation, or a song that you wouldn't think is normally associated with the type of music you'd be into, or whatever? And as you know, I like a lot of rock, I like a lot of rap and hip hop and whatever. But I tell you, man, this song comes on, I am cranking Caribbean Queen, and I'm loving Billy Ocean. So this was the song that I wrote back to George.
I hear you, E, and I actually have a playlist called entitled "No Kidding," because people would be like, "Really, Jonesy? No kidding!" Like Kings of Leon, King Harvest, Dancing in the Moonlight, Brown Eyed Girl, Van Morrison, like Jack and Diane, like Fleetwood Mac. People would look at me and go, "Really, Jonesy? No kidding!" So that's what it's entitled, the "No Kidding" playlist.
I like that. I might have to do that myself then, Jonesy, because I got a lot that would go on that
list.
A lot.
Pat Benatar, Starship.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Come on, dude.
Yes. All right. I might have to get on that then, the "No Kidding" playlist. All right. Just to clean it up again, folks, so you know what's going on, because it's a very busy day in Toronto sports. Jays, Yankees, 6:30 first pitch for the Blue Jays, 2-0 in the spring season. Maple Leafs, 8 o'clock puck drop against the Oilers, and they could make history with 3 straight shutouts with 3 different goalies if they can get it done tonight against the Oilers. And the Toronto Raptors and the Detroit Pistons going toe-to-toe, and it's on these airwaves. Jones and I will be back in about 5 hours with the tip-off between Detroit and Toronto at 7 o'clock Eastern. Thanks to Michael Grange for joining us today, Dan Plesak as well. Writer's Block comes next. It's been Smith and Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.